chair the second time, and I supervised it.
Okay, and that's what this stuff is about.
Was it?
That, those.
Oh, was my, yeah, that's how I got this in my possession.
Okay,
I was just in the file.
Yeah.
But because of my, because I volunteered to do it, my background in carpentry instruction to my father's experience.
Yeah.
It was an interface with the guys.
Does that material show how we cut the lecture hall on the second floor in half lengthwise to have a second and third floor space? Is that part of that design there?
Yeah, that is, as you recall,
on the north side.
Yeah, on the first floor. I mean, originally, this produces 324.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Because, recall, we initially had on the second floor. Well, actually, we also have to divide it up the second floor into little spaces.
Yeah.
And then we split. This was all one big room.
Yes.
Yeah. Then we had the chapel. The chapel stayed at the chapel.
I've got a good picture of the chapel.
Yeah.
When the Divinity School was there.
Oh, okay. Well, we never modified the chapel, I recall.
Nothing other than the front stage.
Right. And I think we added the rooms in the back hall.
Yeah.
But that was the second renovation.
Okay. Okay. Well, now, where's your research space after the air conditioning? After you got
yeah.
After the first renovation of the third floor.
Well, most of my space is up there on the third floor.
In offices. In the front, okay.
In the front.
Okay.
Yeah.
So by now, is Odom in there by now? And
yes.
Okay.
Odom's down the hall. There's Fox, there's Odom. And maybe that is it.
Were you on the corner?
Yeah. I was.
Yeah. Okay.
In here. I moved to this office. I mean, this is an office. These are research.
Now, but your research space was not there until we moved out of Wesley Hall. You moved out of there, out of Wesley Hall, before we moved into Wilson, did you not?
Well, in the next space, was Stevens and stuff.
Yeah, okay. Now, was this the 7th and 9th floor of the physics building?
Well, not the 7th and 9th, it was the 6th and 7th.
6th and 7th.
Yeah. That renovation took place when Tom was chair. And that was made possible by the dean. Dean was departing as resigning, or his term as dean was terminated.
Which dean was this?
Holliday.
Holliday, okay.
And Holliday had money in the college budget. And under the new central administration tax, he would have to give the money up. And he didn't want to do that. And he felt that we were the most deserving department in terms of needing space. And he had shell space in Stevenson 6 and 7. And also, there was space in the basement, the lowest level of math and of molecular biology, brought about by the discovery when they built the Stevenson Center that there was this void down there called the cavern. And they didn't have to dig, it was just this big empty space. And so they finished it out as shell space, so they had put a foundation down there. So he had shell space in Stevenson physics and then Stevenson molecular biology. And he had his budget was pretty tight. And so he spent it on psychology. And the major need was animal space because of the thing called ALAC, American Association for Laboratory Animals. American Laboratory Animal Accreditation System, code, something like that. The Association for Laboratory Animal Accreditation, I suppose. But they required new provisions for maintaining animals in a sanitary, healthy way. And our animal space in Stevenson, in the Leonard Lab, didn't meet that. And so we put the animal space in the cavern and the human research space in 6 and 7. And I was heavily involved in that. I was in interface with those guys. We had a very tight budget, and which means we didn't finish the floors. We used a fairly cheap heating cooling system, and used minimal materials. And that solved our space problem.
So who moved into the 6th and 7th floor with you?
Bill Smith and John Harvey. They got social psychology labs that had won. Hans and Bob Liebert got a space for producing videos, a light-controlled space. Joe Laffin. John, Cost, and Vivian had the, and Bill Cole had the animal space. I had a little animal space.
You had animal space at Wesley Hall, too.
I had space for falcons on the rooftop.
Tell us about it.
Well, I was interested in stereoscopic vision and predatory non-mammalians. And a non-endangered predatory non-mammalian was a falcon, specifically a small falcon called a sparrowhawk, which was quite plentiful. And so he devised an experiment which forced stereoscopic depth perception in the falcon. And in order to keep falcons, special requirements are needed. They need to be in large cages, need natural sunlight, and and those conditions put on the outdoor cages, which we put on the rooftop of Wesley Hall.
So when you put out shell space in Stevenson, that wasn't your Falcons?
No, that was for research on tree shrews and galagos. And those were animals made available to Vivian Casgrande, who developed breeding colonies for those prototypical primates, or what are called prosimians. Galagos are prosimians before simians. And tree shrews are regarded as sort of the starting point for mammals. Sort of mixture related, second origin and mammals. And so I had animal testing space for those animals. I had also worked with cats, but wasn't using cats at the time. We moved to Stevenson. But the animals came from Vivian's breeding colonies, and I just had tested them. And Fionn had his complete operation now. And Bill.
And that's where we were until Wilson Hall.
That's right. Yeah, we moved directly from Stevenson to Wilson Hall.
What year did we move in, 6th and 7th floor?
Well, I'm not sure. The Tom was chair.
Okay.
We had some problem filling Stevenson, and that the original plan was for the cognitive group to move, at least some of the cognitive group to move to 6 and 7. And the cognitive group said they all wanted to stick together on the fourth floor.
On the fourth floor, if you did?
Yeah. And that was a little bit of a problem because we didn't fill the space the way we said we would fill the space.
Okay, interesting.
It was a little bit of potential embarrassment.
Interesting.
Because Wendell wanted to make sure that we looked like we knew the space. Because he had gone to the mat defending his use of the plane.
Okay.
And the cottage group was Branston, Franks, Clayton, who else?
Well, McNamara eventually.
McNamara came later. I guess it was Bill Thompson.
Bill Thompson. Yeah.
There's somebody else on the fourth floor. There were a lot of pots that people on the fourth floor.
Les Moore was up there eventually.
Les Moore? He came. No, he wasn't in Brooklyn.
But he's not cognitive.
Yeah. But he wasn't in. Nobody was Wesley Hall.
Somebody like him was on the other side.
Bill Smith.
Yeah. Well, we were all down on the south side.
Yeah. Bill Smith was on the north side.
Okay. Let's talk about your search.
Okay. What about it?
Well, one thing that strikes me about your research and career, unlike lots of people, especially me, is that you stuck with one topic, not solely with one topic, but an ocular rivalry is still of interest of yours, and you're still doing work on it.
Sure.
And that's a lot of time.
But that's not the right topic.
Huh?
If that's the only topic.
No, I know that. So, but so that's one of my questions is, how did you maintain interest in binocular rivalry for so long?
Because it's just a fundamental topic. Einstein maintained an interest in gravity throughout his career. And he said, why gravity? Well, gravity has a lot of implications.
I've heard this talk a lot, and I want to hear it again. Why do we have two eyes? Kind of issue.
Well, right. Well, explain.
If you would like to talk about that some more, you're welcome to do that.
Yeah. Binocular is important because it sets the interface of the mind-body problem. And it involves a disruption of the normal close correlation between phenomenology and physics and simulation. And we can learn a lot about that interface because we can interrupt for some time the operation of those two parallel systems. And so that's the fundamental issue, the question of visual awareness in mechanisms in general. It also has some practical implications, such as the impairment of vision. We see in children who have eyes that are misaligned, resulting in permanent severe impairment in one eye, produced by the brain turning off the input of one eye in order to maintain binocular harmony. And presumably, you know more about the mechanism of binocular rivalry. You can develop a therapeutic technique. So that part results that justifies and sustained support and research on rivalry over the years. And interest rivalry has undergone revision or has increased dramatically in the last 20 years. I did my first experiments in the 60s, but now we see a resurgence of interest starting in the 90s. And so it's now become a topic that has a section in introductory psychology textbook, whereas before it was never mentioned. You'd have to explain to people what it was. Now, when I write an article now, when I say, in effect, nowadays everyone knows what binocular rivalry is. No need to justify this investigation. In fact, one has to now be specific on what aspect of rivalry you're talking about. Anyway, that's something.
That's what I want to hear. What about other stuff?
Such as other research?
Yeah.
Well, probably one of my most widely cited publications is the investigation of stereoscopic depth perception in human infants. And we were first to show how stereoscopic depth perception becomes manifest in human infants at about 4 months of age. There's an article in Science that scooped a number of other people. John Lankrath, he scooped other people and showed that stereoscopic depth perception emerges in infants. 4 months of age, using random element stereograms as the unequivocal technique to demonstrate stereo. The other developmental thing I've done is investigating the ability of human infants to discriminate biological motion. These are patterns of motion produced by putting points of light on the joints of moving individuals. And when the individual moves, the points of light move, one immediately knows the action being engaged in by the person. Absent that motion, you see it seemingly random pattern of lights. But it's the biological motion that is the critical stimulus. And we show that the infants at 4 months of age become sensitive to it, thereby suggesting that it's probably something that's not based on extensive learning experience.
What's the current thinking about that?
Oh, what about
biological motion?
Oh, in what sense? Currently, thinking about it in terms of mechanisms? Or?
Yeah.
Well, it's probably thought to be something that's not learned by experience, but probably an innate mechanism in the brain.
A biological motion detector system?
Well, that's a good question. Parts of the brain light up more when you look at biological motion patterns. I'm not sure what that means, but you can always see correlations between the brain and fMRI data and some behavioral thing. But it's considered to be a complex kind of motion. These are two of the special case. Present in animals, present in humans. Another line of work I pursue is perception and mental retardation, people who are minded mentally retarded. And found with parents and those individuals. Which bears on a general question of the genesis of mild mental retardation. I guess those are some of the things.
Okay, good. One of the things that struck me when I was going over, as part of the proposal for the CORE grant, the Vision CORE grant, your Vita was in there, otherwise I would not have been able to see it. And one thing that really struck me about that is what a bunch of good graduate students you had. In this list of just a few years, there was Bob Patterson, is that right?
Yeah.
Steve Lemkuhl.
Yeah.
Debbie Mock.
Yeah.
Andy Langston.
Yeah.
Ellie Francis.
Yeah.
Steve Kaporos. And that's only a partial list. Can you tell me about whatever you want about your graduate students and how you feel about how they've done?
Oh, I don't know. Each person is an individual case. I guess it's so much their own deal rather than me doing anything that it seems to be presumptuous to talk about my graduate students and how they've done. I guess I'm a little uncomfortable with that. By the way, Steve Orsch, for example, wasn't a graduate student of mine. He was a
postdoc?
Yeah, postdoc. And he, his PhD supervisor was in Richard Irving.
I wasn't suggesting that you were responsible for their careers.
Yeah.
But I still think it's remarkable what a good group it seems to have been.
Well, of course, the one that's...
Maybe this is your good fortune. Still there.
It was the one that's...